if you explore a little bit, if you allow yourself, your mind to kind of be curious about things and go into it, knowing that maybe I can learn how to do this or learn a little bit about it and improve my ability to converse about this thing or to do this particular skill, you'd be surprised with what your mind can do.
That's Nelson Dellis, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Among his many credits, Nelson Dellis is a 6-time USA memory champion, 2-time Guinness World Record holder, and a world-renowned memory coach. In addition to being a university professor and a keynote speaker, he shares his passion for unlocking the mind's potential with over 300,000 YouTube subscribers. He joins us to talk about everyday genius, hacks to boost your memory, focus, problem solving, and much more. Nelson, welcome to Conversations.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, there is so much in this book that there's no way we're going to talk about it all. So before we talk about a few tips that you offer to help us with our memory, give us an overview of this book. What are people going to find here?
Yep. So the book is called Everyday Genius. And I chose that title very intentionally because I wanted people to feel like genius is something that is accessible for everyone in everyday life. And that was my experience. You know, I never thought I was gifted in any way. I still don't. I am a memory champion, but it's something that I taught myself. And over the years, a lot of people will just label me as genius because I could do these phenomenal feats of memory. But they're just little strategies that I've trained. And so that opened up this idea that genius is so subjective and we all can tap into some genius abilities. You just need to learn how to do them and work on them.
In the introduction to the book, you talk about the genius mindset. What is that and how can we apply that?
Yeah, so the genius mindset is really just to kind of open the door, right, to what it takes, in my opinion, to be a genius, at least in this subjective term. It starts with, I think, being curious that, you know, a lot of people get stuck in their ways and they like to do things certain ways and don't really explore out of that. But if you explore a little bit, if you allow yourself, your mind to kind of be curious about things and go into it, knowing that maybe I can learn how to do this or learn a little bit about it and improve my ability to converse about this thing or to do this particular skill, you'd be surprised with what your mind can do. Another part to that genius mindset is consistently showing up and doing the work. I think it's something, genius is something that you have to work on. You know, some people maybe do it a little more effortlessly. But if you're doing it consistently day in and day out, for example, I work on my memory as a brain exercise every day. That's where you're going to build this genius. I think another part here is play, having this fun look on everything and not, you know, you look at numbers and maybe it looks complicated and just out of your realm, but numbers can be such a beautiful thing if you play around with them. And that might be all the difference between you being terrible at handling numbers and calculations in your mind and being, quote unquote, a genius with numbers and having an amazing number sense. So the genius mindset is really having an open mind to the brain being able to do a lot more than it can and understanding that it takes a bit of work. Granted, the tips in the book are quick wins and everybody can do them and see how well they work, but that's not the end of the road, right? It's something that you need to kind of internalize and think about every day and work on it.
There are lots of techniques for memory in this book, but you begin by saying that it starts with just 3 simple steps. Tell us about those.
Yeah. So to memorize anything, I think it really boils down to those 3 steps. The first step is visualization. So you're trying to see the information that is in front of you in some kind of memorable way. What does that mean? Well, we remember things. Our brain remembers things that are colorful, sensory, emotional, right? So if you can tap into those things as you come up with a picture for whatever you're memorizing, you're going to remember it better, right? So if you're remembering or trying to remember a grocery list and the first item is milk, right? Most people would just look at that word and there it is, M-I-L-K, milk, okay? What if you took that a bit further, right? What does milk look like, right? Okay, so now maybe you're picturing a carton of milk. Okay, that's a step in the more visual direction. Instead of it being the word, now it's an actual thing. But go further, right? What does milk mean to you? This is not that deep, but go there, right? Like, okay, milk. I think of, you know, when I was a kid and I dip my Oreo cookies in milk and how that made me feel. And now suddenly you've tapped into something emotional, right? And fun and maybe a pleasurable, nostalgic childhood memory, right? You can take it even further, right? Elaborate on that scene. You're dunking these Oreos. Maybe the milk splashes in your face. Maybe there's even a cow there spraying the milk out of its udders into your cup and you're dipping your Oreos in there. So now it's not just your memory. It's now some like fantastical, bizarre, disgusting thing, but it's memorable, right? And so being able to tap into there, again, that's that play, allowing your mind to play. That's what's going to stick in terms of a visual. The second part is to organize those images. So one image, fine. But most cases, we have a lot of images or things that we need to remember, a sequence of numbers, a whole grocery list, not just one item. How do we keep all of those pictures in order or it's structured together? And that's the thing. Most people don't have a technique to store information like that. Nobody's ever taught you. But there are many techniques to do this. And thousands of years ago, this was something that people did every day. And one of the main techniques we use at memory competitions to memorize long sequences of things is something called a memory palace. And what we do is we piggyback off of something we know really well, which is our house or a place that we frequent a lot, our job, our office, whatever. I guess back in the day they had palaces, but studio apartment works fine. But you can mentally walk through this place because it's some place you know very well. And if you place the images of the things that you want to memorize along a route, all you have to do to recall the information is think, oh, I stored it in my house. Let me go back to my house, walk through it, and the images will be there. So that's the second part. And now you've given your mind kind of like a mental file cabinet to sort things in. The last step is review. So those first two steps will get the information in your mind very quickly. But if you want it to stay there for a long time, you have to review. That's just the nature of our brain. It tends to remember things that are there that are reviewed a lot and forgets things if they're not touched. And now that you have a format in which to easily review, you can go back to your memory palace, for example, then you can review easier without much assistance from a textbook or the information on a page of paper. It's up here. And the more you do that, the longer it'll stay.
One of the things a lot of people struggle with is just remembering someone's name. You can take some of the principles you just described and I imagine not only remember their name, but where you encountered them, like where they work, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, have this whole picture. But let's talk first of all about remembering someone's name. What are the tips you offer there?
Sure. So taking those same three principles, you apply it to an interaction where you meet someone. Okay. So obviously, it's a little more challenging because you have a social element to it. There might be nerves involved. It might be loud. It's a quick introduction. Who knows? Maybe you didn't hear the person's name or it's just awkward. There's a lot of things that can assist in making you forget or making it more difficult. But the process is essentially the same. So you have a name that is given to you. That's the information. So convert it to a picture. So you meet a Nelson, right? What does that make you think of? Well, maybe I picture Willie Nelson or Nelson Mandela, right? Whatever comes to mind, you can come up with a picture for it, right? Doesn't have to do with me. It's just a picture to represent this name, this set of characters that is me. The next part is to attach it to something, to organize it. And a way to do that with names, the best way to do it with names is to use the person themselves as the anchor. Instead of a memory palace, which is another place you're thinking of, why not use them? They're right in front of you. So use a feature, a distinguishing feature on their face that you notice to anchor the image to. So you might look at me and be like, oh, Nelson has a pretty big nose. Okay, you don't tell them this, but this is mentally what you're thinking. And then you can attach an image of Nelson Mandela to my nose in a weird, memorable way, just like we did with the milk and Oreos, right? The crazier it is, the easier it is to remember. And then, of course, review. So using the person's name, testing yourself, do I remember this person's image and name? Yes, Nelson Mandela on his nose. That kind of thing will fortify the image even further and help you remember for longer.
One of the things you address in the book is focus. We live in such a world of distraction. You devote a chapter or so to focus. What advice can you give us there?
Yeah, I mean, in this day and age, I think the biggest problem with focus is that there are so many things out there vying for our attention. I mean, there's apps specifically designed. And there's teams on those apps that have all they do is study how to take our distractions, to take our attention away. So part of the problem with focus is us trying to fight that. So I think a big place to start is recognizing what are the distractions in your life and removing those. You know, I often find that I have a lot of kids, so they are a distraction when I really need to get work done. So having my private, personal, dedicated space to do my deep work is super important. And I recognize that I can't do work when I'm around them, right? When they are playing around me, that doesn't work. And then my phone, right? Trying to put my phone somewhere else because I know it's an easy thing to look at or to open up. So that's the first step, is recognizing, being honest with yourself with what are the distractions in your life and removing them ruthlessly, right? If you truly want to get deep work done. Another thing is recognizing that we're not good nowadays at working for long stretches. And it's hard and it's taxing to do deep work for long stretches of time. So breaking up your study sessions is super helpful. There's this technique called the Pomodoro technique, where you set a timer for 25 minutes. And it doesn't have to be 25 minutes, but something that is short enough to feel like, yeah, I can work for 25 minutes uninterrupted, but not long enough to be like, I'm not going to even try this, or you give up halfway through. So 25 minutes timer, and then 5 minutes, you get a little break, right? To do something where your brain isn't on at all. And then you come back and you do another 25 minutes. And you can stack these Pomodoro sessions. And the idea behind it is, yeah, you can do anything for 25 minutes, and it makes these bite-sized deep work sessions more palatable to get more stuff done.
In another section of your book, you talk about social situations and how we can observe body language, for example, to help us read people and what they're thinking, even though they're not expressly saying these things.
Yeah, it's not an exact science, but I think when you put a lot of pieces together, you can make reasonable assumptions and kind of gather things about people. And there's a lot to it, even beyond what I talk about in the book, but it's just a little nugget of stuff that you can keep in mind to help some of your situations. I mean, something as simple as, you know, when somebody is talking to you and they're directly facing you versus kind of angled away or even, you know, turned around, will signify that they are truly intentional about or focused on you, right? Or maybe they have something to hide, right? Because they kind of want to, they're kind of looking to get out, right? A little nuances about how their feet are positioned even, and different facial cues can signify whether they're maybe, again, it's not an exact science, but maybe they're being untruthful or they're exaggerating or they're really interested, right, in you at that point.
There's so much more of this book that we don't have time to talk about. But what's kind of a big takeaway in terms of how the brain works that maybe people don't understand?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to recognize is that the brain is so plastic and moldable. There's so much more to our abilities than we give ourselves credit for. And yes, I'm a firsthand, I have a firsthand account of the memory things, but a lot of the other things in the books are things that I picked up along the way and got interested in and learned myself. I'm not as much of a master at them as the memory stuff. But once I learned the memory things and realized that I could be a memory champion and someone who never forgets things, it felt like I could do anything with my mind. And that's really the goal of this book, is to show people what they're capable of. We all have this inner genius within us. And it's just a matter of, first of all, recognizing that, going through some of the little exercises and getting those little wins to build the confidence and be like, oh yeah, I surprised myself, I could do that. And then it exploding from there. Because once you open the door, it's hard to stop. And that's what I do with my memory seminars, is I start off with a simple memory technique. I ask people, who here has a terrible memory? They all raise their hand. And then my goal is always just to show them a glimpse of how that label is wrong, that they've self-labeled incorrectly. And that once they think that label is wrong, then the world just opens up. And that's what the point of this book is for, with intellect in general.
Well, as you mentioned, you're a keynote speaker, you're an author of several books about memory, and you also have a YouTube channel where people can learn more. Tell us about the best way to find you on YouTube.
You know, my website's nelsondellis.com. There's tons of information there. But on YouTube, if you just search my name, you'll find plenty of videos about how to improve your memory, fun musings about the brain, and interesting deep dives into cognition in different forms. I don't really have, I mean, it's broadly about the brain and memory, but you'll find all sorts of things about how to get smarter.
To learn more, the book is Everyday Genius: Hacks to Boost Your Memory, Focus, Problem Solving, and Much More by Nelson Dellis. Nelson, thank you for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.